Okay.
So you were going to listen to her speak?
Yeah, so I found out she was speaking. So I was there. Natalie couldn't go with me. She, unfortunately, she was passing a kidney stone. And she couldn't go. And I had, I'm not sure whether I had told them in advance that I was going to be there. I might have. I might have dropped them a line and said, I'll look forward to seeing you in Chicago. But when they came in, it was like we had seen each other just, you know, the day before. And it was really nice to see them. And they were very kind. And I saw her at a reception. It was before her speaking engagement. And it was the regular reception that they were having that evening for the delegates for the Bar Association and the guests. And they said to me, look, the Arizona Bar is having a reception for Madam Justice up in their suite, and won't you come up and join us? They were having a champagne reception. And I said, oh, I'd be delighted to. So I did. And they were very cordial. And at one point, when they understood that Natalie couldn't be there, Sandra made the suggestion, why don't we call Natalie up? Which we did. So needless to say, she was quite surprised to see who was on the other end of the phone. And but, you know, they were just really, really nice that way. And I've called her a couple times since. I've tried to get her maybe to come here to speak for like a Pitt commencement. They've asked me to try to line her up. Wasn't able to. And I wanted to get her to come to our bench bar conference because we did get the present Chief Justice to come. And he had spoken there a year or so before. And she, of course, is very coming from Arizona as well. It's very close to him. He's sort of been her mentor, and Justice Rehnquist, and he was a very unassuming guy, I might add, at the bench bar conference.
He came,
he spoke, and I remember he was on the elevator with someone. Someone told me this story, so it's not apocryphal, but coming down, and he's introducing himself. Hi, I'm Bill Rehnquist. You know, and that's the way he was going around introducing himself. So I said to Sandy when I was talking to her, I said, look, if Rehnquist can make it, why can't you make it? You know, but that's a tough time of the year. That's when all their opinions are coming down and so forth, the middle of June. And it's just a very difficult time for them to get away. But I won't give up on it. I'll get her eventually. And so that's an interesting side story about old Army buddies.
Right.
The Handmakers we keep in touch with. We were invited one year to come to Louisville for the Derby, and unfortunately Muriel got ill. But you know, we talk on the phone every once in a while. We do exchange Rosh Hashanah cards. And oh, yeah, the Handmakers, absolutely. And so the others were not. But we've never really gotten together again. It ended up another small Jewish world story, though. While they were there and we were there, we both had our, while we were in the Army, we both had our first children. So we being the Handmakers and us, what I didn't tell you is, I told you how they had their apartment. We got the apartment next door to them. Brand new. Yeah, we were close, yeah, for two and a half of those years, right? And they, because we got out at the same time as well.
And was that the last time you actually saw them?
No. I may have seen Muriel once at another time. Stu, I got to see because, believe it or not, we even had a couple cases together, and he came to Pittsburgh. He was handling a case, and it was an employment discrimination thing involving a professor. It was a professor from Louisville who came to Pitt. It was just a coincidence. And so we were able to work together on that case. What happened was they had a little girl, Ellen, which eventually became my daughter's name later, who was born, I think about the same time, whether it was right before or right after my first child, Tom was born. Now, Tom was born while we were in the service, and he was born at the hospital was Fort Belvoir Army Hospital, which was around 20 miles south of Washington, so it wasn't like in town. Natalie, for her outpatient care, went to Fort Myer, which was a military post like spitting distance away from where we lived, so in Arlington. In fact, that was the post where the Arlington Cemetery Honor Guard was posted, and that's where the handmakers and ourselves, we would go and take turns going to see the movies for a quarter on the post, and what we had rigged up between our two apartments was an intercom system, which Stu apparently had access to because his stepfather was with that company, Executone. And in those days, though, you had a wire. I mean, it wasn't like they were wireless. Everything today is wireless. And so the wire ran through the hall. And so they could go to the movie, and we'd babysit for them. Mm-hmm. And when we would go, they would babysit for us because they had one kid, we had one kid, and that's the way we did it. Well, would you believe, we found out later, totally independent, that those two kids, Ellen and Tom, both were in the entering class at Boston University together.
Nobody knew this?
We did not know this in advance. We found that out afterwards. They both ended up going to Boston University to go to college. And, of course, they were classmates. And they saw each other occasionally, but they... This isn't one of those stories where it turned out they became romantically involved, and you know, and our best friend's kids got married. Nothing quite like that ever happened, but I just thought that was a very interesting coincidence. Yeah, too. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that was so the Army experience was a very pleasant one for us. We belonged to the officers' club, and you know, and most of the Yes, but aunt and uncle were there. This was like having your parents in the same town with you, and we spent a lot of time with them. You know, we would go to synagogue services together, go to, you know, high holiday services. We went in Washington to the Washington Hebrew congregation. We were Reform, and both of us had been brought up that way. Natalie had been a confirmant of Rosh Hashanah, and I had been confirmed, when my dad was in the service. I think I told you that earlier. It was a Reform congregation, and my bar mitzvah was in the Reform congregation in Uniontown. So you know, we still participated in those kind of things, and when Tom was born, the question then became, well, are we going to have a bris? And how to arrange for all of that? Because you had to get out of the obstetrical unit in those days in 3 days, okay? I mean, today we don't think that at all shocking. In fact, that's an extra day,
yeah, right.
the way things are today. But then you always stayed in the hospital for at least a week.
Sure.
When you had a baby. And, yeah, exactly. So we had to have the bris at our apartment. So we lined up the moil, and we had the bris.
Was he military?
He was not, no. But, you know, this we did it through our aunt and uncle, and they knew who was who. And we did that, and we decided we'd even do one more thing. So it was when the kid was, Tom was like a month old, we even had a pigeon in the bed. And we, now, Natalie's aunt and uncle, Uncle Nate and Aunt Ann, they had a good friend who was an administrative law judge. His name was Cohen. And so since he was a Cohen, he could be, we could use him to redeem our child from him, which we did. We got the ten silver dollars or whatever it was, which he, I guess, subsequently gave to some Jewish charity. And but we had ourselves a pigeon of Ben. I'm not sure that I ever had one when I was a kid, but we thought that was a nice thing to do. And so it was nice having family there. And that was really one of the reasons why we wanted to go there as well. And
it's such a wonderful city anyway.
Yeah, and it was. It was pretty much of a small town then, believe it or not. But it's changed a lot. Yeah. It really was. Of course, it's changed a lot since then. But, Stu Handmaker and I, we'd drive to work every day the mile or two to the Pentagon because we were living in Arlington. That's where our apartment was. It's sort of fun to go back there and try to find it.
Yeah.
It's right in the Roslyn section of Arlington, and which at that time, the Marriott, what is now the Marriott, Key Bridge Marriott Hotel, was a hot shop restaurant. Do you remember the hot shops?
Yeah,
the hot shops. Yeah. Well, that's part of Marriott. It was part of Marriott. From that came Marriott. Marriott's owned the hot shops, which was a national kind of thing.
And would you say Key Bridge Restaurant?
Key Bridge hot shops. It was the site where they ultimately built the Key Bridge Marriott Hotel in Arlington. And the whole so-called downtown Arlington just wasn't there. Roslyn Circle, which was at the end of the bridge, I think the streetcar tracks actually ran around it, and there was a frozen custard stand. I think that aside from that and the hot shop, that was the big goings on there. I mean, you go back there, you can't even, with the interstate and everything else, it was all we could do to find our ways back up to the old Fort Bennett apartments, which overlooked that in the days when we were there. So, but that was
a good time.
Yeah, that was a good time. That was a good time, and eventually, you know, of course, I had to get out, and I had to find myself, what was I going to do when I got out? I came back, I sort of checked out, maybe I could go to practice law with my cousin Sherm in Washington, PA, but he had a son who was coming up, he thought might be wanting to come in with him, or a daughter. I don't even think he was thinking too much of his daughter in those days. And the funny thing is, the daughter ultimately became a lawyer and is very successful, but she didn't come back to Washington to practice. And the son is a, what shall I say, musician, artist?
So he didn't join the practice.
No, he did not go into law. He did not go into law. But I kid Cousin Sherm about that from time to time.
So
because. So we decided I'd try to find something in Pittsburgh. And I went around, I interviewed at different offices, and one office talked to a rather distinguished Jewish senior citizen, who's one of the head of the firm at that point. He says, "Too bad you didn't go to Harvard." He says, "Maybe we could do something for you." He was a Harvard vet. No, I'm not going to give you the name. No. Not for him, I won't. But I'll give you another name. I talked to Lewis Kaplan, and he was like a Jew in an island of Gentiles at the.
Is his with a C or K?
C.
Was there difficulty for Jewish attorneys?
Yeah. At that time, there were a couple who had broken through, but it was very difficult for Jews to get involved in the big firms. A couple of them made them. Lenny Scheinholz was like the first Jew at Reed Smith Shawn McClay and was able to go in with them and work in their labor law area and is now a senior partner of that firm. Of course, that firm takes in many Jews.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't go into Kirkpatrick, which was a firm that started up right after World War II, or Buchanan, or now one of the firms that did that did, because not at the time that I was getting out. It was a break off from Buchanan, and that was Eckert Siemens Charon and Malott. Now, Charon was Jewish. They broke off from Buchanan, Buchanan Ingersoll, to form that firm. But I came back, and I was just looking around at where I could go. I went to one office, and they told me they would, I think, pay me $400. Let me tell you what I was making in the Army, I mean, so we can get some appreciation for where we're coming from here. As a first lieutenant, I was making $500 a month. And with the $500 a month, I was able to actually save some money. I would send an allotment home. I'd buy a savings bond a month, and I'd put $50 into a savings account back at the dollar bank, and just allotted it directly. So we were able to get along very nicely, even after the baby was born. Baby is one of the cheaper things. Really, as long as they're healthy, you know. And, yeah, you were getting the military stuff taken care of for you, so you didn't have doctor's bills or things of that nature. And you could buy things at the commissary less expensive. And the cost of living just really wasn't very high. So when I got out, I sort of figured, though, I had to make about the same amount. I mean, we'd really gotten used to this princely sum of money. And I had the best I could get offered as I went around to the different firms, assuming they would hire at all, because they just weren't hiring many people. All these veterans were coming back and so forth and so on. It was a $400 a month. And it was $200 a month. But I could keep half of any of the business I brought in. Not that I had that many contacts or anything. That just didn't seem like that was enough that I could get started on. So I ended up not going into private practice. I ended up taking a job with the then Western Pennsylvania National Bank, which was sort of a upstart bank. It had been the old First National Bank of McKeesport, and it had been go-getter in a gentleman named M.A. Cancellier, who was their president. And they had just merged with Halperin's Bank in Pittsburgh. They had bought out their bank. And they had this location out on Fifth Avenue at the corner of Fifth and Washington Place, which is right across from where the Chatham Center is now built. And they also were planning an office, you know, right in the downtown area if they could do that. But I started in McKeesport, having taken the job. And I commuted, okay. Knowing I was getting out in 1956, We came home, we looked around, and we bought a house.
The bank in McKeesport?
The bank in McKeesport, mm-hmm. Western Pennsylvania National Bank. I was a trust officer.
That became the Equibank, didn't it?
It became Equibank, which became a lot of other things after that. It became Union National after that, and then it became Integra, right.
National City?
Right, now National City. Exactly. Well, you got that straight. Mm-hmm. And we came and we did some home shopping, and we found a house right around the corner here on Hastings Street, 637 Hastings Street, top of the hill. And we decided we would do some a little remodeling there. We fixed up the kitchen, added a powder room, and this was before I got
shopping.
Yeah, after I accepted the job.
Because you knew you were
going to
commute.
Yeah. We got it. Well, actually, I'm not even sure whether I'd accepted the job then. We just knew we were coming back here, so we would have to have a place. Although a lot of that may have happened about the same, but we closed on that house in November, and actually got proceeded with some of the remodeling that had to be done because I was due to get out the end of December. And I did the end of December. And I started with the bank on January 2nd, up 57.
And you, I'm sorry, I missed what you actually...
I was a trust officer. And they were trying to get their trust... They had always had a trust department, but they really wanted to get it up a level. And they already... the head of the trust department was someone that had left the old People's First and had come out to be the... left their trust department to come out. And his name was Elmer Deggie. And so I came to work for him along with another fellow who, in fact, was my classmate out in... had been a classmate of mine in law school. A fellow by the name of Leo Batista, who was originally from Oil City. And there were like three of us who were trust officers. And we worked in McKeesport. And I was there about a year until they opened up an office in the J.K. Porter building downtown, which is the other aluminum skyscraper next to the Alcoa building, right on Fifth Avenue. At Fifth and, well, at Grant, and, I'm sorry, it was on Grant Street, at the corner of Grant and 7th? No, 6th. 6th, across from William Penn. And so I was in McKeesport, and that was sort of an interesting homecoming for me. If you may recall, that was my father's hometown. And so there were a lot of these people here who knew my father's family, and it was sort of fun to be there. It was, you know, small town. But I'd say it's a little worse now than it was then. And just got to renew a lot of old acquaintanceships and met people who... older lawyers who had gone to high school with my father, things like that. Unfortunately, that year that I was back, my dad died in March. So really never had the chance to do what I thought we might have been able to do. And yeah, he was.
Was that in 57?
Yeah. So, and then after that... my mother then moved to Washington, Pennsylvania, and she then, I guess, several years thereafter, remarried. And I think I told you a little bit about that earlier,
mm-hmm.
in Washington, PA. When you're a trust officer of a bank, you're sort of a lawyer's lawyer. Because what you're trying to do in that position is several things. One, obviously, you want to perform your function, which is to administer estates, wherein the bank is designated as an executor, or you want to administer trusts that have been set up either... by people while they're alive or that are being set up by virtue of trusts that are created in their wills and see that they're properly invested and so forth. And part of your job also is to try to get as many lawyers as possible to work with their clients or to get the clients to designate you in their wills as to be their executor and their trustee. So part of the service that you offer to the legal profession is we'll draw up the wills for you and the trust for you with your approval. You know, but we, in fact, do all the work. And the lawyers like this very much because...
No
cost, right. And it's just a way of getting business. So it's important that you keep up your good relationships with the legal profession. So I would stay involved with them, and I belonged to the what was then called the McKeesport Lawyers Association. We had our own little bar association, which was part of the Allegheny County Bar, and I belonged to that as well, of course. And got involved with some of the committees of the Bar Association at that time. The obviously with the section that had to do with real property and trust law, and and I also got involved with the Law Day Committee. We used to celebrate Law Day on May 1st of each year, and eventually I became chairman of that committee for the Bar Association, which was my first committee chairmanship. That was... I guess the thing I enjoyed most about that is every year we would have this a big luncheon for the bar, and also for students from high schools who would be invited to come in to tour the courthouse and to participate in the Law Day proceedings. Each school was asked to, you know, designate a couple of their kids that thought they might want to be lawyers someday to do this. And so the year I was chairman, I remember, I'm trying to think if I was still with the bank then. I know when I started with the committee, I was with the bank. It may have been after I was in private practice. But for some reason, I keep thinking I was still with the bank when I because I was with the bank for almost 10 years.
But you were only in McKeesport for the 1 year?
For a year or so, yeah.
And so you stayed at the bank for an additional 9 years?
Yes.
In the same capacity.
At one point, I was even the acting head of the department when Elmer Deggy left. Mr. Cancer was looking for a little more of a hot shot, I think, though. You didn't have to be a lawyer to do this, and the guy he ultimately picked to head up the department, after all, I was still pretty young, as department heads go in banks, and that probably worked against my interest as well. He ended up getting a man who had been a former bank examiner and so forth who came in to do this. But my first year at the bank was somewhat memorable for the wrong reasons. I, while working there, passed out one day at work, took a seizure. They didn't know what it was. This was in McKeesport. I went home. I remember it was Shabbos, because it was a Friday. I remember feeling well enough that was able to go to dinner at my mother-in-law's house. She always had Shabbos dinner. We had dinner, and after dinner, I remember we went back home. All right, can we cut this off for a second?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Went back home, and this was a time when New York Giants had just switched over to San Francisco, so it was a night game, but it didn't start till 11 o'clock at night, and I remember being home and listening to the game, and all of a sudden I took another one of those seizures. And it ended up, the police had to come, and they didn't have 911 then. But if you remember, we had these old police ambulances, and the police used to do this kind of stuff. And they took me to the hospital. It turned out that eventually I ended up going, my brother-in-law at that time was a intern at the University of Pittsburgh, I guess he was at one of the hospitals, I guess Montefiore, I think that's where he interned. Yeah, he interned at Montefiore, it ended up that they felt I needed surgery, and the suggestion was made by my physician, while he felt very competent and would be able to do it himself, that they do this all the time up in New York, and they sent me up to Columbia Presbyterian University to the Neurological Institute. And I ultimately, it turned out I had an arteriovascular malformation, an AVM, which is where a... Arteriovascular malformation, AVM. It's where the capillary, there's no capillary joining the vein and the artery. It's just, it's sort of like a birth defect kind of thing, and it sprung a leak. Of course, we didn't know what it was at the time. Here we are as we had